Good afternoon and welcome to Wellness Watch here at WGXC 90.7 on your dial. WGXC is a community, hands-on radio station, and I'm Linda Carlson. I'm your host for Wellness Watch. I have a program that focuses on different conditions that people might be experiencing, chronic conditions, preventative measures for just staying healthy. And today, I have with me Denise Phillips, who's a registered nurse, and she's a certified diabetic educator. And we're going to be talking primarily about type 2 diabetes. Diabetes is a lifelong chronic disease in which people experience high levels of sugar in the blood. And there are tests that can be done to be able to screen for diabetes. But what's interesting is that diabetes affects more than 20 million Americans, and over 40 million Americans have pre-diabetes or that early type 2 diabetes. And so today, Denise and I will be talking about some of the screening, some of the symptoms that people might experience, and maybe some of the, try to identify some priorities that people should identify in order to prevent complications from this disease. So welcome, Denise. So would you like to just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Thank you, Linda. And I'm a registered nurse for 35 years. I'm also a certified diabetes educator for about the last 8 years, working with people to help them improve their health and manage their conditions.
Oh, well, great. So the certification, that comes through some special study and testing. Is that right?
Exactly. Right. It's, there's a certification board. You do a lot of extensive training and take an exam to meet the certification. Yeah. And then you renew that certification every 5 years and maintain your expertise in the field through your practice as well as your continued study.
Okay, so you're current, you're up to date. In order to keep your certification, you really have to keep your pulse on what's happening and all the changes. Because I know, being a nurse and being in the field as well, that there are so many changes, and there's no way I could even begin to talk to people about the different medications. And I know, being a certified diabetic educator, you can do that. Also, for our listeners, many hospitals do have diabetic education programs, and you'll have certified diabetic educators there. There will also be nutritionists who specialize in diabetes diets. So, again, for our listeners who are diabetics, we highly recommend that check your local hospitals, and Denise will be giving you some websites and different ways to gather some resources to keep at your fingertips to keep you well. So we did say that there are symptoms that people might experience, but they may not show up for many, many years. So there are a lot of people walking around with type 2 diabetes. What might those people look like? What would you be looking for in somebody who's diabetic?
Well, that's a good question, Linda. And, you know, one of the challenges with diabetes is a lot of times you can't see anything about it.
Right.
A person may be overweight. They may be sedentary. They may have some fatigue or increased hunger, thirst, urination. But as you said, they may not show those signs.
Right. So what else? What would you recommend that people do who sort of fit that category? We've got some obesity. We have obese children. That's an epidemic. That might be one of the first clues to be checking. If I'm eating too much, I'm probably eating too much sugar and too many bad things that could predispose me to diabetes.
Absolutely, and it's important to have a conversation with your doctor. Go for regular checkups. Have them check your fasting blood sugar and have a conversation about it to see where you are. Mm-hmm. How is your body functioning? A lot of type 2 diabetes is related to either the body is not producing enough insulin,
okay,
or the insulin is not working the way it should.
I think they call that insulin resistance?
Insulin resistance or impaired glucose tolerance.
Okay.
You know, those are a lot of big terms that you can have that conversation with your doctor, but say, hey, what's my glucose? What's my family history? I want to look out for my health, and
right.
I want to be in the best health I can be. You know, I want to live a long, productive life.
Right. And we know people can do that if they
Absolutely.
Take control. So you mentioned a fasting blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
What's a number that people would start to get a little bit nervous about?
Okay, that's a good question. And actually, there's a second category now. You mentioned the prediabetes
right.
earlier, and that counts in the fasting blood sugar levels as well.
Okay.
So nowadays, a normal blood sugar is less than 100. And a diagnosis of diabetes is a blood sugar, fasting blood sugar, that's higher than 126 on two separate occasions.
Okay.
Now, in between that realm, between 100 and 125, that fits that pre-diabetes category, where your blood sugar is just a little bit higher than it should be, but it's not high enough to classify it as a diabetes diagnosis.
Okay, but those people then could progress to full-blown type 2.
Absolutely, absolutely. And studies have shown that people with pre-diabetes who lose weight and increase their physical activity can prevent or delay type 2 diabetes, and in some cases return their blood sugar levels to normal.
Wow. So let's digress maybe just a little bit then from that diabetic profile and talk a little bit more about, you know, from a dietary perspective for somebody with prediabetes. They tend to be overweight. I think that might be correct. Correct me.
In general, yeah.
So what would your recommendation be in terms of what would be the first step in looking at, well, what am I eating and what can I change around my eating habits?
That's another good question, Linda. And I think, you know, you mentioned how things have changed over the last 10, 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, obesity has become an epidemic as well.
Right.
And the rise of diabetes.
So there's a correlation there.
Correlation with that. Yes, absolutely. And a lot of the foods that we eat are fast foods, processed foods,
right.
High calorie, high carbohydrate, high sugar, and it's almost part of our lifestyle now.
So what it sounds like to me then is that I'm loading up, I'm carb loading, I'm sugar loading, and the whole high fructose corn syrup can get me going on that that piece. But so I'm loading up, my body has all of the sugar, and the insulin is coming from, I think, it's the pancreas, right?
Correct.
The pancreas. Mm-hmm. So it's coming out, and then it's like this door, and there's a lock there, but there's so many sugar people banging at that door, and the insulin just really sort of shuts down and can't work. Would that be
simpler? You're right. Well said, Linda. And, you know, we're then overtaxing our insulin production.
Okay.
Because if the insulin is either not producing enough or not working as well, like we said, impaired glucose tolerance or insulin resistance, then the more sugars and carbohydrates we put in our body, the more we're requiring our pancreas to put out more insulin to try to address that.
Yeah.
And it just can't keep up.
It's getting tired.
So it's getting tired, and we're kind of wearing out those beta cells that produce the hormone.
Right. So first step, if I had to make a decision, I might say, well, gee, carbs. I should cut back on carbs. And then we know, well, we've got Atkins and we have South Beach. And so a lot of people will go to extremes and then they yo-yo. What I've done in trying to be healthier is eat healthier carbs. So some people say, oh, I have to eliminate carbs. And then so they eliminate everything. What would you say about carbs? What's your relationship with carbs? How do you feel about them?
Well, I think it's good to have a good relationship with carbs. You don't want to go to either extreme.
Okay.
You're right. Going to the Atkins, you know, on your doctor's approval after a discussion, maybe it is right for you for weight loss, but you need to be monitored by your doctor.
Good point.
Because it can cause other metabolic issues.
Okay.
But as a rule, you know, you want healthy, basic eating the Mediterranean diet you hear mention of today,
right,
or just eat your fruits and vegetables, add whole grains, and a balanced way of eating so that carbs, carbohydrates, we need them for energy. That's what's broken down into the glucose,
okay,
and our cells need that for energy. So you can't eliminate them. It's just not going to work for your system.
All right, so I need them so when I go walking, I've got a little bit of energy, a boost to get me across the Rip Van Winkle Bridge.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, for that distance, even a little bit more maybe on that day. But that's something you can check with your doctor as well. A couple of good resources, because you did mention we could utilize those, the American Diabetes Association. And that web address is www.diabetes.org.
Wait, repeat that for our listeners.
www.diabetes.org.
And what can they find there? What could they expect to see?
They can find information about diabetes. They can find information about pre-diabetes and how to help delay the onset of diabetes or prevent it. They can find information about carbohydrates, about food planning, exercise, tests to talk to your doctor about, which like the fasting blood sugar and what does it mean. The A1C test is another test that we haven't touched on just yet.
Why don't you elaborate since we've got there? So we know that we can control the diabetes through diet. We mentioned exercise. We'll get there. But the testing blood sugar or having some kind of indicator of how well I'm doing. And we know the A1C is pretty accurate. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's also exciting in the progress of diabetes management because up to a couple of years ago, the A1C was used only for people with diabetes. It was not used as a diagnostic tool. Now they're utilizing it for both diabetes and pre-diabetes. And what it is, it's a blood test that your doctor can order along with your regular lab work, and it shows the average of your blood sugar over the previous 3 months. So even if your fasting blood sugars come out at a normal level or a pre-diabetes level, the A1C may give you and your doctor a little bit more information about really how your body is functioning.
So you
in relation to carbs.
You can't hide all that cheating from your doctor.
No, you can't. You're right. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And for people without diabetes, a normal A1C is less than 5.7%.
Okay.
The diabetes diagnosis is usually if it's 6.5% or higher.
Okay.
And then that range in the middle between normal, a little higher than normal, but not high enough for diabetes diagnosis, is that middle range between 5.7% and 6.4%. And again, you know, it's not a just a one-time test.
Right.
You have fasting blood sugars as well. You discuss it with your doctor. You may have lab work done on separate occasions. And then you discuss your lifestyle and your medical history with your doctor, because that can come into play as well.
Right, right. The one thing about the testing now, my understanding is that if you are newly diagnosed or you've had a lot of stress and your blood sugars go way out of range, that then they might want to test those more frequently. But out of the gate, what can somebody expect to hear from their physician about how often they'd have to have an A1C tested?
If they have a diagnosis of diabetes, it's usually the standard is every 3 months.
Okay.
Unless if their A1C is stabilized at target, they may extend that to every 6 months.
Okay,
but as a rule, general rule, and this is per the American Diabetes Association recommendations.
So going from 3 months to 6 months, for me, that might be a motivator to say, gee, you know what, if I can get my blood sugar stabilized, then I don't have to go to the doctor, I don't have to pay a copay, and I don't want to see his or her ugly mug.
That's a good point, Linda. Yeah. And also with diabetes, the other way that you can get information about what's happening on a day-to-day basis with your blood sugar is checking your blood sugar at home.
Uh-huh. Tell me about that.
Well, that's something that is very important, as we said, and it's another indicator of the progress that's been made over the last, 30 years with diabetes. Do you know that in the beginning they used to check for diabetes through the urine, and they would even have people tasting urine? So I don't know if I can say that on the air.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes. Well, you know, I go back to being a nurse in the hospital and the dipsticks.
Dipsticks is another way. Yeah,
I have a little sidebar for people, pet owners. We know that animals get diabetes, and they now have litter things that you can put in the litter that when the cat or the dog urinates, that you can get a sense of what their sugar is. Little sidebar there, but going back to the self-testing, typically, I mean, does it hurt? Or you were talking about advances. What are some of the ways that people do that, or what do they have to use?
Well, the glucometer is the device that's utilized, and then you have something that's called a lancet, which is a tiny little device to prick your finger. Mm-hmm. You use the tips of your fingers on the sides, on the pads, and to draw a drop of blood that you put on a strip that fits into your machine, and it reads the glucose reading at that time. Now, again, with the advances in glucometers, they now have very easy, fast. You probably have seen commercials on TV for ones that you put the strip right near your finger and it almost sucks the blood right out. It's a very, very small sample. And they have ones where you can do alternate site testing, like on the pad of your hand by the base of your thumb or your forearm. So for people who have sensitive fingers or use their fingers in their jobs, they may prefer the alternate site testing.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think that's new information for me, actually. So people shouldn't, they can't use that as an excuse. Oh, well, my fingers hurt, or I'm using them too much. So they do have alternatives now. And I guess the best way to get information would be start with your physician or endocrinologist. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's tell our listeners, an endocrinologist is a specialist who treats one of the hormonal conditions, and one is diabetes. But a primary care physician, a good nurse practitioner, so a good primary care group, they can manage diabetes. You don't have to be seeing specialists. It's when you are not satisfied with the care that you're getting, you're reading, you're thinking, gee, I should know this, or I want to have that piece of equipment, or I saw on TV. God bless commercials. Sometimes they are good. But I saw this, and you're not getting the information that you want from whoever, from your provider. So remember, your primary care group can manage it, but if you're not satisfied, then definitely, look for an endocrinologist.
Absolutely, and it's important to have a good relationship with your physician also, because you want to keep that dialogue going. Mm-hmm. You and the doctors that you see, you're a team together to figure out what's the best treatment plan for you. How are you going to meet the goals that you want and the targets that you want so that you do improve your health and you lower your risk of future complications?
For instance?
Well, with diabetes, you have a higher risk of coronary artery disease. It's almost twice the risk of somebody who doesn't have diabetes.
So if you don't take care of yourself, you're going to have diabetes and heart disease.
Exactly. And then back to the diabetes itself, it's high blood sugars over long periods of time that can do damage to organs like your eyes, your retinas, your kidneys, your feet, your nerves. And all of these complications, you can lower your risk of that by meeting the targets. Get your A1C down to the target range that you and your doctor want. And in general, the American Diabetes Association recommends, based on studies that they've done, to keep your A1C below 7% when you have diabetes.
Okay.
And you do lower your risk of those complications.
And I think that I have read also that just a 1% reduction reduces your risk of complications. So you don't have to go from 13 to 7, but just keep working consistently to lower that down to 7.
Exactly.
Right.
You want to trend it down to normal. You want to figure out what's the best way to get there, whether through medications or diet or exercise, mm-hmm. or all of the above. Because they're all important.
Right. Now, people, I think, might have a misconception that if you have diabetes, you go on insulin. And we know that's not true, that there's an array of medications you can take by mouth. There's some old standbys, but there are a lot of new ones on the market as well. So tell us a little bit about what the progression might be. Why would somebody... All of a sudden, the doctor would say, well, now you have to go on insulin. You've been on oral medication. Talk to me a little bit about what this might look like in terms of treating with medications.
That's a good question, Linda, also. Mm-hmm. And it's a complex question.
Yeah.
And I'll start off by saying individuality of your treatment plan is key.
Okay.
Okay, because everybody's a little bit different. So you're right. There's not just a set progression. Mm-hmm. There's a progression in how to treat, or there's an array of medications mm-hmm. to choose from depending on your specific circumstances. But as an individual, that really comes into play. The other important key is we're talking about type 2 diabetes today,
right.
and medication. So
right.
just to mention that type 1 diabetes
okay.
is totally different,
mm-hmm.
and persons with type 1 diabetes do not manufacture their own insulin in their pancreas, so they require
okay.
the external insulin.
Good distinction.
Okay.
Good distinction.
So, again, with the progress that's been made over the last 10, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
the array of medications is just outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many different medications your doctor can choose from, and it's helpful then to be able to fit your diabetes into your lifestyle. So that you and your doctor, again, can work together to find what's right for you as an individual. So you have oral medications.
Okay.
You have medications that may stimulate your pancreas to produce more insulin. There's medications that work with your liver so that your liver doesn't release glucose at certain times.
Interesting.
You know, it's so complex. The way
mm-hmm.
the body is a fascinating thing, as you know, being a nurse
right,
as
right,
well.
Right.
And it's so complex, and it's only recently they're learning all about the different hormones that contribute to glucose management in our bodies, hormones in our intestines,
mm-hmm.
things that send messages to our brain to make us eat more or eat less. And they've developed these into medications now. So some of them are injections,
mm-hmm.
but they're not insulins. They
okay.
work with
oh,
the
okay.
other hormones that are key in glucose management.
So it could be that now a physician has a good collection to mix and match and find the best for that individual and keep them for a long period of time. If the individual takes some responsibility, watches their diet, eats well, is adherent to taking their medications, and then another part we didn't elaborate on, and we were talking about a lot of things here, and it's amazing how time flies when you have so much information to share, but the exercise part. I mean, we know that exercise, I know exercise is good for you. I do the bridge 4 times a week. I do 4 miles, and it releases endorphins. It makes you feel better. It can control blood pressure, but it also has a positive impact on blood sugar.
It does. It does. It just helps your cells, your muscle cells, utilize the glucose more effectively.
Ah, okay.
It also can be a factor in helping you with weight management.
Mm-hmm.
It also helps to exercise your heart so that you are helping, again, to prevent any heart disease. It also burns calories.
Right. Well, and I didn't want to scare my listeners when I say, oh, 4 miles. You don't have to start at 4 miles now.
No, absolutely not. You know, there's a tagline that is on TV now in some places, and it says, eat less, move more.
Oh, okay.
And that really is good advice because, again, back to being an individual, someone who is who has an excessive amount of weight to lose that they want to cut back on, and maybe they have a sedentary job or a sedentary lifestyle, just getting up for a couple of minutes every day is going to be an improvement.
Right.
They're moving more. Whereas someone who maybe walks the bridge only one night a week. Can accelerate to your level.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on, again, what you're doing now. You just want to try to move forward so that you're utilizing that exercise almost like another medication.
Right. And for, again, for our listeners, I know Denise very well, and she walks the walk. She walks the walk where in her workplace. On her breaks, she gets up and does a 10-minute walk, at least two times a day?
At least two times a day. And, you know, for me, I don't have a concern about the mileage that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Am I doing a half a mile? Am I doing a mile? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'm not doing that much, but I know I get out every day for however many minutes I can during my work day because I have a sit-down job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Right.
That's important.
So, yeah, people will say that would be an excuse. Well, I'm sitting down all day, but I know in my workplace that wearing a pedometer from my seat to the cafeteria and back, I get about an eighth of a mile. The hallways. So pedometers are really a good tool to help people get going. I know the American Heart Association suggests 10,000 steps a day. That might be quite daunting, but just wearing it. People who wear a pedometer tend to be more successful. So exercise is really, really important, not only for diabetes, but overall well-being mentally, as well as physically.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple minutes that we do have, I did want you to touch on a little bit about depression in chronic disease so that that doesn't hold people back from saying, I can't do this. So talk a little bit about depression or not feeling interested in what you're doing or not sleeping well. How does that play into diabetes?
It plays a big role. You know, any chronic condition can bring us down. It's something like diabetes you have to deal with every day.
Mm-hmm, right.
You don't get a day off.
Right.
That's challenging.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
challenging. And our mental health, our behavioral health is something that we tend to ignore a lot of times, especially for the women who are listening who are caregivers for others or always doing for others, and we don't get enough me time. Or pay attention to ourselves. Diagnosis of depression, they've shown in studies, actually can raise your A1C.
Wow.
You know, or the reverse is really what the study is based on,
yeah.
that when you have depression and you get it treated,
mm-hmm.
your A1C can come down.
And if you exercise, that will help your mental status. So
exactly.
it's all interrelated.
Right.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. It's amazing how quickly the 30 minutes passes. So just to recap, we were talking about, Denise is a certified diabetic educator, talking about type 2 diabetes specifically. Treatment is, you know, good nutrition, there are medications available, exercise is paramount, and having a good relationship with your provider. So get out there, make that appointment with your physician, talk to them, and visit the American Diabetic website, American Diabetic Association website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Visit there, and we wish you the best, and thank you, Denise, for joining me today.
Thank you, Linda. I've really enjoyed myself, and it's been a pleasure to share this information with others.
Great. I think I'll have
Good
you back
job.
In a couple months for the type 1.
Great.
All right.